Now, we've been going very, very slow in here because that each verse is kind of laying a new principle that you operate upon. But now then today, he's come back to riches again. And so we're going to be talking about that problem that all of us have, and that is having too much money. And what you do with all of that extra money that you have. Now, and then he will come to a conclusion, and then starting in chapter 7, why it will be an approach of life in just a little different way. Now, before we really begin this on money, and as we can jokingly say that we all have too much of it, you know, and then we can laugh, and each one of us down deep in our heart is knows that we're trying to figure out how to pay our bills and how to get along in life, and try to get something that we feel is absolutely essential out there, you know, another house or another car or a first house or a second car or an airplane or something. I mean, you know, we all have some particular thing that we feel is pretty important. Let us keep this in mind, that wherever you are on the financial status, you are dissatisfied. And wherever you are on the financial status, you want a little bit more. And it makes no difference. And you feel that if you had a little bit more, that your life would be easier, things would be much, much better. You do not have any problem with money. And even if you had more money, you would not be rich. Other people are rich. And if you were rich, like other people, you wouldn't have too much trouble. You would give massive amounts to the Lord, and you would do great things if you were, you see, like somebody else. Now, this is a normal thing. Paul dealt with that in the 2 Corinthian letter when he was talking about giving. And he was talking there to them about their giving and giving in poverty and so forth. And he makes it clear to them that the Lord doesn't care what you would do if you had a certain thing. Lord doesn't care about that. The Lord does care about what you do with what you have, regardless of how little or how much it is. So let's all remember that on the financial status, that we all feel the same way. It doesn't make any difference attitude toward it. Now keep this in mind, that if you have a rug on your floor, any kind of a rug on your floor, it automatically puts you in the top 5% of the richest people in the world. Now think about that. I didn't say if you have a couch. If you have a rug on the floor, but you don't have enough money to buy a couch to put on the rug, you automatically are in the top 5% of the people in the world financially. Now let me see the hands of the people that do not have a rug on the floor, so I'll know, and I don't want to talk to you this morning. I want to excuse what we have to say because I don't want to talk to poor people. If there's any poor people in here, any poor people, I want to excuse you. Raise your hand. No, nobody in here. And you say, well, boy, you mean if I've got a rug? Yeah, 95 people out of every 100 in the world really do not have the luxuries of having a rug on their floor. So, actually, if you live in America today, just in a normal situation, you fall in that particular category. And that's the reason why so many people in this world look at Americans and say, all Americans are rich. We wipe our brow and say, oh, if they only knew my financial status. I'm barely paying my bills. But as you look through their eyes, we're all rich. Now, keep in mind, we are rich. But riches are relative, aren't they? See, you're rich in relationship to the Ethiopians. Somebody else is rich in relationship to you. Now then, let's look at it. And what we say here applies to whatever money you have or whatever money anybody else has. All right, in verse 13. He said, there is a grievous evil. That is, there is a terribly bad thing which I have seen under the sun or on this earth. Namely, riches kept by the owner thereof to his hurt. And those riches perish by evil adventure. That is, that a fellow makes some money, and then he decides that he will do something with that money, that he is going to invest the money in a new business, and the business fails. Or maybe you say, well, I've never had that much money. I just couldn't afford to go into a new business. Well, have you ever got enough money ahead to where you say, I can now trade cars? I can trade from my 1962 model that's about to break down. I can get me a 1968 clunker, and which will be a little bit better. So you trade up. When you trade up, you found it's a lemon, and it turned out to be bad. And you wish that you had kept that $100 that you invested in it. It doesn't make any difference if it's 100, if it's 1,000, or if it's 1,000,000. What he says is there is a terribly bad thing, and that is when you save up your money and you become rich, you get some money and then you invest it in some way and it turns out to be bad for you. It hurts you. It says, and those riches perish by evil adventure, and if he hath begotten a son, there's nothing in his hand. You die, you don't leave anything for your children to inherit. Even though you might have become filthy rich, that is a terribly bad thing, isn't it? I mean, stop to think. Now, let's take a rich old dude. Somebody that's really filthy rich, and somehow or another, he loses his riches, and he doesn't have anything to leave to his children. He dies a pauper. That's a bad thing. I had a grandfather like that. During the Depression, he made $100 a day when other people were making from 25 cents to 50 cents a day. He was making $100 a day. Now think of all the money that I'm going to inherit. Are you impressed? I mean, there is money there, isn't there? When you get to looking at that. And when he died, his children had to pay his medical expenses and the expenses for his wife, who had been dead for several years, and had to pick up the tab for everything. He not only not left anything, it cost them a lot of money when he died. Now, that's a bad, sad story, you see, of what happened to him. He blew it through evil, immoral living. All right, verse 15. It says, as he came forth from his mother's womb, naked shall he go again as he came, and shall take nothing for his labor, which he may carry away in his hand. You could put all the riches in the tomb that you want to, but it'd be like King Tut. They put millions upon hundreds of millions of dollars worth of gold in King Tut's tomb. How much did King Tut have? He has nothing. Other people have dug in, they found it, now then they are taking it around and showing it and charging so much to see it, and they're getting rich off of the gold. You see, here it is, 4,000 years later, other people are getting rich off of it. King Tut doesn't have a dime of it. And so, as you look at little babies, it does you some good. You go and you see a little baby born. How much cash does a little baby bring into existence? Those of you who've just had some, how much cash did they have? And then when they said, wham, they said, here, Ma, and they handed you something. Or how many gold rings did they have on their finger? Or how much financial value did they bring in and give to you? Well, now, when you die, you're going out exactly the same way. All right, 16. And this also is a grievous evil. This is a bad, 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 terrible thing, is what he says. That in all points as he came, so shall he go. And what profit hath he that laboreth for the wind? All his days also he eateth in darkness, and he is sore vexed, and hath sickness and wrath. I said, this is another bad thing. Not only are there people who work and they get rich, they have a lot of money, they invest it in a new automobile or a business or something else, and they belly up. They lose everything they've got. That's a bad situation. You've lost your life's work. But there's another bad situation, and that is that a fellow gets rich and then he eats in darkness. He loses his eyesight. Or he gets sick. He can't do anything. Can't do what he wanted to do. And so what he does is that he eats in darkness. It's just a dark situation. He's sore vexed. He's in terrible pain. And he lives in sickness and in wrath. I had an aunt one of the daughters of this grandpa is talking about. She never had any children, and her husband was making good money, and they saved the money, and they weren't about to waste money on their children. They were going to travel when he retired, and they lived in a nice home. And when my dad and mom would go down to see his sister, this lady, why, she wanted to make sure, you know, that when we came in the house, that we didn't have our shoes on, we might mess up their floor. And one time I remember Dad and Mom was so mad that I got sleepy, and they were down there visiting, and they said, "Well, don't go home." They said, "We'll go home." "No, don't go home," said Wyatt. Said, "Lowell, you know, can sleep here." Said, "Here," said, "let us fix him a just laying there on the floor." You know, in other words, not on our bed. They would not permit any child to be laid on their bed. You might mess up the bedspread in some way or another. And these are just little things that this is the way they lived. And nobody really liked them because they were so stingy. They were so tight. They didn't want anybody to fool around with their wealth and their riches. Well, guess what happened? At age 52, he got cancer and he died. Then, just a few years later, she then got cancer of the arm, had it operated on. Then she got diabetes and got down, and about the last 10, 12, 15 years of her life, she was laying in a bed about 90 pounds without an arm, crying almost all the time. When anybody come to see her and try to cheer up, that just make her more sorrowful, and she'd lay there and cry, and, "Oh, I wish I could die. Why can't I die?" for about 15 years. And this nursing home was taking all of my money, and finally it took all the money, and I think that she had about $300 of all of her wealth left when she died. So it came out right across the board that it didn't cost the family anything. Well, there's just a life story of this down here. In other words, that's a bad situation. Now, here are some people who lived, and they were putting a great deal of hope in money. When we retire, we'll still be young enough that we can go out and do what we want to do. We won't have any kids to hold us back. Won't have to wait to try to save any money for the kids to inherit. We can really live a good life. And then you spend the last 10 or 15 years of your life crying because you don't have any kids to come and see you. And when I would go back, I'm her nephew, and she would cry, and, "Oh, how much I love you. Oh, you just seem like a son to me," and da, da, da. Well, that's true. I mean, she was the closest relative that she had. And so there's a rich aunt. You see why I talk about I don't have much hope becoming a millionaire? There's a rich aunt. Loves me. Give me everything she had when she died. She had about $300 that she divided up among her brothers and sisters. I think they got $68 and something apiece. It's just things that happen, really. So if you put your hope in money, there's a couple examples that can happen. Now, are those the only two examples? Or could anybody else tell about their grandpa and their aunt or somebody? Why, everybody in here can say, "I have a story, I have a story, I have a story." In other words, it's repeated over and over and over and over and over again, you see. Take Howard Hughes. Which one of these fits him? Well, how did he spend the last days of his life? Sick. Morbid. Locked up in a room in there with all of those billions of dollars flying around out there. He's locked up into a room. Only one individual was able to get into the room to bring him in food. And he was in there, and he kept all of his urine, and he kept it in jars, and he stored it all around the room. Can you imagine what that was like? That's how he lived. And when he died and he went in there, that's what the room was filled full of. And there's one of the richest men that ever lived. Happy with it? How you like it? See, grotesque, deformed, great beard, slobbers coming out of his mouth, afraid to go outside, look through peepholes, and only when he had to be fed would he permit one individual to come in, and that's all that could possibly come in. And so he said that's how he died. Who did he leave his money to? They're still fighting over it. It's still in the courts. And it'll be in the courts for many, many years. And it'll end up that the lawyers are taking off. You see, they're draining off $1 million a month in the court fights, and finally they'll end up with it. And how much money did Howard take with him? Where is he? What's he got? See? Okay, verse 18. He said, "Behold, that which I have seen to be good and to be comely, that is proper and right, is for one to eat and to drink and to enjoy good in all his labor, wherein he laboreth under the sun, all the days of his life, which God hath given him, for this is his portion." Now stop to think there. Isn't that the conclusion that he constantly comes around to? In other words, life on this earth, what's it about? Well, enjoy what you've got. Enjoy the fruits of your labor. You do have a job. You are making some money. Now, the first thing is, you say, "Yeah, but if you knew how much money I was making." I mean, it is so pitifully little. It is terrible, you know. You could give a sad story. You could write a song, become a bestseller, see, on how bad your finances are. Is that what he says to do? Just be sick and sad, and if you can make more money. No, if you're making money, then enjoy it. You say, "I can't enjoy it. I can't go to a movie." That's not what he said. He didn't say enjoy it if you can go to a movie. "But I don't make enough money to take my wife out to dinner." That's not what he said. See, he didn't say enjoy it if you can take your wife out to dinner. He said, "Whatever you've got, then enjoy it." And you say, "Yeah, but we're eating beans and popcorn." And that's all. Well, I know people that that's all that they've eaten, beans and popcorn for a long period of time. What does this say do? Enjoy your beans. Enjoy your popcorn. Sit down and say, "This is great." A lot of people don't have beans. All they have is popcorn. And a lot of people would, yeah, no butter. A lot of people would like to have some popcorn. See? So sit there and enjoy it. See, that's the thing that he's telling us to do. Don't wait. Don't wait to get rich to be happy. See, that's the point he's trying to get at. If you're waiting for happiness, you know that life holds a lot. Life has a lot of good things about it. Don't wait to be happy on down to that particular period of time, because you are going to have another new set of problems when you get down there. And you're going to be looking at, "What can I do? Now, if I could just do this, you know, then this would happen here and here and here and here." So don't wait. Don't wait. Because if you're going to wait to be happy, guess what's going to happen to you? You're never going to be happy. Happiness will never come. So make up your mind. "I'm either going to be happy today or I'm never going to be happy." And don't give that old sob story. "Well, yeah, I'll be happy, but whenever you have a but in there, that means that you have an attitude and a disposition that guarantees you're always going to be an old sad face all your life. You're always going to be a sourpuss. You're always going to be somebody that can never find happiness. And so, sure, there are times that come in on you. You say, "What happens if a truck rolls over me and I break my leg and I'm in terrible pain?" Are you trying to tell me to be happy then? Well, yeah, I'll be happy. Sure, be happy. Can you be happy while you're crying? Sure, I didn't get killed. And so they're hauling me into the hospital. I'm not dead. I'm still alive to spend that $4 I have in the bank. Yeah, you can be. There's always something that you can find to be happy about. And joy doesn't depend upon pleasure, just pleasure of the flesh. Remember in Hebrews 12, it says Jesus endured the cross, despising the shame, for the joy that was set before him. So while he was hung up there, he endured and he despised. But what other attitude did he have? Joy. Do you suppose you could walk along and look at his face and see that he was a man filled full of joy? Because he was up there laughing and joking, he looked over at the other guy and said, "Hey, did you hear the joke about the..." That's happiness to us, isn't it? Having a part in telling jokes? Oh, sure, that's fun. But can you have joy if you're hanging on a cross? in pain, and people down there mocking you and making fun of you, and you know that you're going to die? Can there be joy in your heart? It wasn't his. It wasn't his. So that's the thing that we're trying to that the Ecclesiastes writer is trying to get us to see. Yeah, change your attitude and be happy about it. All right, now look in verse 19. Every man also to whom God hath given riches and wealth. Now wait just a minute. Where do you get your riches and wealth? God gives them to you. He gives them to you through your labors and so forth. Sometimes people inherit them and so forth. But whether you work for it or whether you inherit it or whether somebody comes along and drills an oil well in your backyard or whatever happens, God gives you that wealth. And if you say, well, I worked and labored. I started out at the bottom. Great. God gave it to you. He gave you the bottom job. He didn't give somebody else. If somebody else had got that job sweeping the floor that you got, they'd have probably been president of the company 10 years before you were. You ever stop thinking about that? And you get to thinking about all the greatness you are and how hard you work for it and how much you deserve it. Well, a lot of people that's a lot smarter than you are, a lot of people works harder than you do. It's just that God didn't give them that job of sweeping the floor so that they could impress the boss of how good a floor sweeper they are, so they could get a job at hauling out the garbage, so they could get a job at something else, and finally they're chairman of the board. See? And so, yeah, if you got a job, thank God for the job. God gave it to you. If God gives you promotions and you get rich, thank God for it. God gives you riches and wealth. And if you understand that, that's your first big attitude in appreciating what is right. All right, he gives you riches and wealth, and says, and given him power to eat thereof. Now, here's two things that you want God to do for you. Don't ever ask God just to give you riches and wealth. Boy, that's bad. Just to have that, that's bad. You can end up like Howard Hughes and like a lot of other people. But now, if you could have this combination, if you could have riches and wealth, and the power, that means the ability and the strength to use them properly. Now you say, what is the ability and the strength that you need to use wealth? Well, first of all, would you need health? Suppose you inherited $1 million today and lost your health so that you are laying over in the hospital with tubes sticking out of you and aching and paining and all that, and they say that's the way it looks, you know, for the rest of your life. How many of you would trade that? See? Okay, you have to have health. Right? Now, in order to use that, many rich people who do not have the health, that's the guy that he just got through talking about up here. What about mental ability? Mental power. What happens if somebody gives $1 million to somebody that cannot mentally use it? It's disposed of. This is the reason that the government giveaway programs don't work. Because the people that the government gives this money to are generally the people that do not have the type of mentality to know how to handle money. And as a result of that, they're never able to make money, and so it has to be given to them. And when it's given to them, there's no appreciation of it. They've never studied about how to use it. They've never learned the proper way to handle it, and so as a result, they just run out and spend it immediately, and it's gone. And so you have to have another government handout, and it just goes on and on and on and on and on. So, mental ability, physical ability, would opportunity, the country you live in, would that have anything to do with it? Suppose that you were in Russia and somebody gave you $1 million. What business would you purchase? How would you invest it? You can't buy anything because the government owns it, right? You could go down to the government and say, you know, I have $1 million. I'd like to buy this store that you have. What would they say? Oh, you have a million? Oh, bless your heart. We'll go home with you. You see, if you put it in the bank, well, the bank then reports it to the government. They take it. If you put it under your mattress, then they go home and they yank it out from under your mattress. So the only thing to do is put it under your mattress and not spend it. And if you're sitting around with $1 million under your mattress every night, you're in terrible shape because you're sitting there and see, I don't have $1 million under my mattress, so I don't worry about how to spend it. But you're going to be sitting there just sick. You have $1 million. What can I do with it? Can't do anything with it. And then also, it's going to make a neurotic out of you, wondering when the government's going to find out about it and come in and take it from you. Does just the country you live in have anything to do with the power? When you get to looking at it, really, when you get to looking at all the things that you have, that you've made yourself, and boy, that you're really something, you know there's very little of it. You ever stop to think about that? Because your happiness really depends to a great extent on the genes that was given to you from other people who died that you don't even know their names. That's first of all. And then, how did your mom and dad bring you up? What kind of people were they? What kind of environment did they bring you up in so that you could live to be a cheerful, happy individual? Or are you a very despondent individual due to this? Those are two things that are just totally out of your control. And then you go out and you get a job. And well, the economic situation have anything to do with it? If you got out of high school 4 years ago and tried to get a job, wasn't it frustrating? I mean, you couldn't go get a job. Here's a genius, hardworking boy, tries to get a job, can't get a job. Why? That's just, we were in a depression. Now then, you can go get a job. You say, well, boy, I don't see why you couldn't get a job back there. Man, I went out and I got a job, you know, the first afternoon out here. Big deal. Why do you go out and get a job the first afternoon? Because you're so smart and so hardworking? No. No, it's just we happen to be on an incline now in the economic realm. Nothing you do. And as you go through life and you begin to see this, you begin to see that all these circumstances surrounding you really is something that other people have done for you, or God has done for you, in essence, and in the different climates that you live in, you get to realize about all that you've contributed to it is when these things happen, you just worked as hard as you could. You did the best job you could do. And if you hadn't have done that, you wouldn't have been successful. That's a necessary ingredient. But that's kind of like salt in a cake, you know. You put a little salt in cake, and if you put salt in cake, and if you don't, it will fall flat. It's no good. But is it the salt that makes the cake? You see? No. No. And what would you think if Morton's Salt Company came in and you'd bake the cake and you'd put a pinch of salt in the cake and the president is sitting around the table and says, oh, what a delicious cake my salt makes. Oh, you know, Hershey thinks they contribute, you know, to this thing, but it's a cake is made of my salt. What would you think? Go home and get a 2-pound bag of salt today and make me a cake. Well, that's about all you contribute to your life, is what a pinch of salt does. That's what he's saying right here. Understand, God gives it to you, and then God gives you the ability to use it, and then you contribute the third thing, which is a very little, and that is you do use it, you see. After God's done all the hard work, after He's had you born into this country, after He has operated the political realm and the economic situation, after He's done all the hard work, and He's given it to you and given you good health, all He says is, why don't you use it properly? That's all He says. If you use it properly, you'll be happy. God will be happy. But if you don't, neither one of you are going to be happy. See? And so that's what he's trying to get us to see. All right? He said in verse 19, every man also whom God hath given riches and wealth and hath taken him power to eat thereof and to take his portion and rejoice in his labor, this is the gift of God. Understand, God has blessed you. For he shall not much remember the days of his life, because God answereth him in the joy of his heart. You will be a joyful individual. You'll be happy. You'll be content. That is God answering your prayers in that way. All right, in chapter 6. He said, there is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it's heavy upon men. This is a terrible thing. A man to whom God hath given riches, wealth, and honor, so that he lacketh nothing for his soul of all that he desireth. You say, yeah, boy, now that's what I'm after. There's the thing I'm after. I don't just want riches, but I'd like to have those riches. I want that wealth. I want the honor that goes with it. I like everything. That's me. That's what I deserve. Yet God giveth him not power to eat thereof, but an alien eateth. This is vanity. It is an evil disease. It's talking about the same thing, you see. That's just a terrible thing to have that, and then it's taken away from it. It happens so many times. Do you know how many businesses fail? People go into business, they save up, you know, $50,000, $100,000, they go into, and out of every three businesses that start, you know how many of them fail? Two out of every three in the United States. It's automatic. Two out of every three businesses fail. Now, you say, well, so what? Well, what I'm trying to say is, two out of every three people that invest their money lose it. Is that an important thing? I mean, is it important in life for you to understand that? Now then, verse 3. If a man begat 100 children and lived many years, right now you wipe your eyebrows and say, what a terrible thing to have 100 kids. You have to understand, from the Jewish viewpoint, the more kids you had, the better off you were, because they were your social security. See? When I grow old, I'm going to grow old, I'll be flat broke. I'm going to have to move in with my kids. I'll move in with one of them, the other two support me. That's what they have to look forward to, right? Now, here's what I have to look forward to. Not much. Not much. Because I wanted a high standard of living, and they're not going to provide me with a high standard. But if I had 100 kids, wouldn't that be nice? If I had 100 of them to divvy in $100 a month, starting next month, wouldn't that be nice? See, that's what he's talking about here. Back in the Jewish economy, that really is the way it works. All right, so if a man begat 100 children, has Social Security that's just unlimited, and lived many years, boy, see, if my 100 kids would give me 100 a month, how long would I want to live? I want to live at least 125 years, right? Okay, so I live a long life so I can get all that. So that his days of his years are many, but his soul be not filled with good. And moreover, he have no burial. I say that an untimely birth is better than he. If you had a premature birth, died in birth, that'd be better. For it cometh in vanity, that is, the baby that was born dead. For it cometh in vanity and departeth in darkness, and the name thereof is covered with darkness. In other words, if I had my kids here to 100 of them, each one of them give me $100 a month, I'm just filthy rich. I live to be 135 years of age, and I'm in pain and agony all of my life where I can't travel the world and enjoy all of those riches. It would have been better for me to have been born in the sixth month of my mother's pregnancy, and I would have died. Nobody would have ever known my name, but at least I wouldn't have had to endure all of this pain. 5. Moreover, it hath not seen the sun, that's the baby that died, nor known it. This hath rest rather than the other. At least that baby has rest. That baby didn't have problems where the rich person did. Yea, though he live 1,000 years twice told. If I live to be 2,000 years to have all that riches. See? 100 kids, 2,000 years. I don't care what extent. It's a terrible thing. And yet enjoy no good. Do all not go to the same place. His point is, your happiness is not in long life. Your happiness is not in this and that. Your happiness is in an accumulation of things. Can you learn to enjoy life? 7. All the labor of man is for his mouth, and yet the appetite is not filled. When you get to thinking about it, everything that you do ultimately comes around to go into your stomach. That really is what it is. And it's a terrible thing that you can't put much in there. You know that? This happened to me yesterday. Helen and I was running around up there. We go by two poor people who have to work. Randy and Cal, and we stopped by the office, you know, and they said, wish we could run around. We said, yeah, we did too. We were poor. And so, you know, and we ran around, and so we'd go to watch the football game. We'd go to Costco's, and she's going to buy, so have all the money, you know, I want. You know, what are we going to have? She's going to fix me supper while I watch the football game. And wow, what do you want? And so we got to looking, I can't eat that much, and ended up, yeah, boy, some quesadillas or something, you know, she fixed. And oh, man, I'm sitting there. She brought them in. I only ate three and got full and couldn't eat any more. And she brought me in some cider, and I drank a glass of that apple juice and couldn't even drink another glass. And brought some popcorn. I only eat just a little bit. And I just kept getting worse and worse and worse, and finally ran out. I said, I can't eat anymore. That's terrible. She hadn't even run out of money yet. And so all of my happiness ended Do you see the point?
My happiness, and I couldn't put any more in my stomach. Didn't make any difference how much money she had, how much more food she had. Your stomach only holds so much, you see. And so I went to bed last night thinking, well, Cal and Randy have it made. At least they worked hard and enjoyed eating cheese and crackers, and I had all this good stuff and go home with an upset stomach, see, and didn't eat too much, see. That's what he's saying right here. He said, it all goes in. All goes in, you see. That really is what it's for. So don't think happiness. It depends on the amount of stuff that you eat. You have to take out the saucer for that. Verse 8. For what advantage then hath the wise over the fool? You say, well, what advantage? Well, the answer is none. Or hath the poor man that knoweth not to walk before the living? Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of the desire. This also is vanity and is striving after wind. Now, what that means is, for those of you who are making just a few dollars an hour, you actually have some money coming in. You know how to use it. You can be happy on your beans and popcorn. You can be happy on that. Over here, somebody else, they're making twice the amount, but they're looking for the day when they're rich. The wandering of the eyes, what could I do? How could I do it? You are happier than they. You don't have anything. They have everything, but they're looking at life in the wrong way. So, in that sense, you're going to be miserable. You're going to be unhappy. Now, in verse 10, whatsoever hath been, the name thereof was given long ago. There's nothing new that you're going to experience other people haven't. What is known about man, can he contend with him that is mightier than he? Seeing there are many things that increase vanity, why is man the better? In other words, there's nothing new that you're going to happen. Now here's the question. For who knoweth what is good for man in his life? There is your question of the book of Ecclesiastes. Now, starting in chapter 7, that begins to answer the question. Here is what is good for you in life. Class dismissed.